This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:06 in the morning, Monday the 15th of November. Another Monday, another start of the week. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Wang Xiaoning and Philip C. Oh, for some thoughts on what may be moving markets this week, we turn to Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Good morning, Vishnu. Happy Monday. Let's start with China, because they're expected to release a deluge of microeconomic data today from industrial output, fixed asset investment, and retail sales. So will all these data points confirm that the Chinese economy is slowing down?
I'm afraid so. And even if it doesn't, I think that's not a consolation or out-of-the-woods picture either. I mean, the two reasons. The very short-term reason is that the power crunch and the pickup in COVID cases in China almost certainly is going to get in the way of any recovery momentum. And so for that reason, a slowdown could persist. Further out, and whilst there may be some silver linings in the way China is now handling the property market with a slightly lighter touch, we're still not out of the woods. And so those risks, and even if we frame it in terms of economic risk, given that the property sector constitutes about a third of the economy, once you take into consideration all the related entities, that means that China's growth from here is not about getting out of the gates and bulldozing its way through.
And meanwhile, President Joe Biden is going to meet virtually, of course, with Chinese President Xi Jinping today. Do you expect any resolution on this front, or maybe an improving of trade relations?
I mean, there's certainly a possibility that on the trade front, there could be some agreements. And I think most of that might have to do with really backward-looking ones, where the phase one deal that was signed and, allegedly not kept to. I think there could be some on that, but I don't see any sweeping resolution or certainly nothing that alleviates the underlying tensions once we look at the whole picture. And I think that's something that markets will have to come to terms with.
I mean, can we just come back closer to home, which is Malaysia? You know, GDP numbers for third quarter came out 4.5% negative. What is your outlook for our economy? And, do you really think the worst is over?
I'm usually a pessimist, but on this account, I'm actually holding a half-full glass. The way I look at it is that the Delta outbreak, of course, had a huge impact, and the multipliers were far worse than anticipated. But we are emerging from that. That's the first thing. And the second thing is with the resumption of activity and some tailwinds from oil, Malaysia is in a better spot, and it has a fairly supportive budget. Of course, Malaysia is not, precluded from any regional shakes that we might see with China, so on and so forth. But we are, I think, past the worst, and we are beginning to look more optimistic on Malaysia's outlook from there.
And if we can turn quickly to India, India's Reserve Bank is opening its $1 trillion bond market to retail investors in what's seen as a major structural reform in fixed income markets. Why has the central bank decided to do this?
I think there are several reasons from this. One is, purely a funding reason. If they were to widen the availability of funding, it does help to keep funding costs lower, particularly for, households looking for, alternatives to just your usual deposits. There's also, I think, a more infrastructure reason behind it, and that's the RBI is looking towards really deepening the bond market. And that's seen as part of opening up the capital market and deepening all of its financial markets, so on and so forth. And finally, also is to get consumers away from purely deposits or equities. And of course, the usual bugbear of gold. And they want another alternative asset class to really allow, an entire spectrum of portfolio diversification for consumers as well. So there are many reasons behind it.
And Vishnu wants to stay on India because India was supposed to do a sale of all its key infrastructure projects as a means of providing some financing to the government. Do you see that progressing? Because India, by nature, has been very nationalistic in terms of its assets, though.
That's a really good question. And to be fair, and I think you make a good point, is our experience from all the previous years has been more often than not, in fact, the majority of the times, the asset sales ambitions, we've fallen short of those. So I think India may not fully realize its, all of its ambitions, but I think it should get towards there for two key reasons. One is post-COVID and the tax reforms, which have actually brought down tax rates, corporate tax rates included. There has been greater pressure on raising financing, and I think this is increasingly looking like a viable source. And the other reason is in Asia right now, given the China risk, India is beginning to look attractive. And with the upswing in the equity markets, the valuations might start becoming a lot more compelling. So I think the short answer is they might make some progress towards it, but realizing the full ambition of it might still be work in progress.
And so one commodity that, you know, India is quite vulnerable to is oil. But there are concerns of a super cycle developing here, right? So with a supply crunch feeding into high inflation, I just want to get your thoughts on whether this oil super cycle will become reality.
So I'm a little bit more balanced on that. I think in the near term, the conspiracy of factors, including going into winter and China on the mode where it wants to acquire energy at all costs, will almost inevitably drive energy prices as a whole complex and along with it, certainly oil prices higher. And with we have to bear in mind that OPEC is also very guarded about releasing extra supply. And they've just revised their demand outlook for the world down, which means they're going to hold back a little bit more on supply. So this conspiracy of factors probably suggests that oil prices are going a lot higher. But at the same time, there are a few other factors we need to consider as we go into next year. What may get in the way of a 2011, 2014 type of super cycle where oil prices averaged $107 over those 4 years and certainly hit a lot higher in between is that we will see some kind of a supply response from shale and oil rigs in the U.S., even if that's more constrained than it used to be. That's one factor. And the other factor is the political pressures for OPEC to release more are going to get a lot more intense given U.S. is facing an inflation issue, which has become a political issue for them, a mainstream political issue for them. That alongside, I think, a push towards Iran's nuclear deal, which also brings more supply, suggests we may have to put up with elevated oil prices and near-term upside risk. But a super cycle, we need not be alarmed by that right now.
Vishnu, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, talking to us about the likelihood of an oil supercycle, which he says he's not too bullish on that. He thinks that prices will moderate, although we will see rises in the short term.
Yeah, I think the other thing that he brought up was actually India, some interesting conversations there in terms of India's kind of moves. One move is, of course, to sell its financial assets, right, or infrastructure. And they need to, basically, because they cut taxes. And as a result, I'm sure they're facing a bit of a fiscal crunch. So, but do they have the will to do so? Because in the past, they make like 3 steps forward and then 5 steps back.
Yep.
But this time, maybe a little bit more will, but, you know, 100% full ambition of their plans, probably not.
Well, infrastructure is really sorely needed in India. And honestly, I think about 2-3 months ago, the finance minister, Nirmala, I think, was planning to do a whole wave of privatizations, right? Especially for their much-wanted railway business as well.
Yeah, their railway is kind of some parts falling to bits, and I've had first-hand experience of it. But right. It is a beautiful country, and I hope they get their act together in terms of getting their infrastructure.
Well, that's the news that we have at 7:19 in the morning. We're taking a quick break. BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with The Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.